You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. 'Cause she never wore socks. She had a pet snake. She bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there. Tell her what to do, so she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode is brought to you by our patrons, Ari Ashkenazi and Professor of Political Theory in Star Trek, Kathy Ferguson.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Mythgreens Podcast. I'm Oren. With me today is
Wes
and
Chris.
And today, guys, I have a surprise. I have been evil this whole time.
What?
Did you suspect anything?
No.
No. No,
because I'm clearly the surprise villain of this, like, podcast.
Wes, you only just joined us. I don't want to stereotype.
I have to say, this has been a continual problem for this podcast. It's like, how can we get hosts that don't suddenly turn up to be evil when it's convenient for an episode? I don't know.
Yeah, this is really a challenge. Yeah, so today we are talking about surprise villains. Which I noticed that as I was writing my notes for this episode, that despite the fact that there are a lot of surprise villains out there, I don't actually, like, understand how to implement the concept very well. Or at least not in a way that I can intellectualize it.
I was thinking about that too, just like, I don't know, like, I was trying to think of conditions and defining the villain, and like, if somebody did this situation, I have a few to bring up later, like, does that make them the villain, or are they just somebody with different motivations that don't happen to quite coincide with what's going on? So,
yeah. Well, I think you're getting a little bit into difference between, like, an antagonist and a villain.
Yeah.
Because a villain is an antagonist, but antagonist wouldn't always be called a villain, right? An antagonist is just a person who has conflicting goals with your main character, or the character that you're following, or the character that is supposed to be sympathetic to the audience. And so, whereas a villain has a kind of connotation that this person is actually, like, not a jerk. This person is not a good person. This person wants to do harm. They are not just opposing the protagonist. They are now also not a good person.
Right. For, like, the purposes of this conversation, I think we're talking about villains who were villainous the whole time. Like, not like someone like Faith, for example, who becomes a villain but was not a villain to start with. Like, something happens in the story to make her, an antagonist.
Okay.
Right. This is not like a hero that descends into villainy.
Right.
This is a character that is introduced significantly before you know that they are a villain or an antagonist. It's something that you get to know unaware that they have, like, a secret hidden evil motives of some kind.
Yeah, I also noticed that all of my examples of good surprise villains are from cartoons.
No.
I don't know why. I just, like, I wrote down a bunch that I could think of that I liked, and they were all from animated movies or TV shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would put these in, when it comes to setting this up as a storyteller, I would put it in two different categories. I mean, there's lots of ways you could probably categorize it. But in a lot of situations, you know that there's a villain, but you don't know who. Or there's situations where you've already have a main villain and you do not know that there's a second villain. And I think the reason why that as a storyteller this is a little bit different is because the dynamic of foreshadowing is different when you know that your audience is actively looking for somebody. It's much harder to put in foreshadowing that will not be picked up by the audience when they're actively looking for a protagonist who could be a villain, which makes it very hard to sort of make a satisfying setup and conclusion. Whereas if they don't even know that a character is supposed to be, that there's another antagonist that is hiding as a protagonist, then that's almost as easier, but it also has less tension because announcing that there's this unknown mysterious villain, you know, raises the tension of the story, which is usually good.
Yeah. Who's the Cylon anyway?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
What I want to know, yeah, I'm going to ask both of you because I'm not sure about the answer, is does the surprise villain have to be a surprise to the audience? Because there are two examples, both of them are from Star Trek, where this is sort of not the case, but I think it's, I felt like it still worked. One of them is in Star Trek Into Darkness, which is a bad movie in general. But, like, the villain, Admiral Marcus, is, it's like...
You know from, like, the beginning.
Right. It's, like, technically a surprise that he's a villain because the characters didn't know, and you don't see him doing anything, obviously evil until it's revealed. But, like, I could tell from, like, the first second I saw him that he was a bad guy. But I didn't really mind. I didn't really feel like that was a problem. And then the other time where this is, I'm pretty sure this is going to happen again, is in the new show, Discovery, where they have this main character who is the first officer of her ship. And they've cast this guy who is, like, this actor who is known for playing villains as the captain. And right now, like, because we were all really hoping for better representation, we were like, oh, great, another white dude is the captain. Ugh. But it's possible that he's going to be a villain and that she's going to have to take him out. But if, like, we all know that because of the meta surrounding the show, like, is that bad?
I don't think so. I think when we talked about foreshadowing, like, weeks ago, right? Like, you can, if it's going to be, like, true, like, surprise, it's a villain, you could foreshadow that, but I think it would be really difficult to pull off. But, like, I don't think there's a problem if the reader, like, or the viewer figures that out early on, because knowing that, like, I think it could, like, enhance the story and not take away from it. There was, like, a great Alfred Hitchcock quote that said, you know, a building, like, suddenly exploding in the middle of a movie isn't, like, that great. But if, like, the audience knows that there's a bomb there from the opening scene, then you know that there's the tension of it throughout. You just don't know when it's going to go off. You know,
if I were to guess, I would say so those two different categories I gave, mm-hmm. The difference is that if you announce there's a villain and nobody knows who it is, then you are building up a mystery and then the audience expects a payoff for that. Whereas if you're not doing that, if you're not trying to be like, oh, who is the villain? There's a villain somewhere. One of these protagonists. Who is it? If you don't do that, then I think it's fine if one of them turns out to be a villain and the audience guess ahead of time because you weren't trying to set that up as a big mystery with a payoff. I think the problem comes when you have you build it up as a mystery, but it's obvious. And if you do that, then your answer to the mystery is not going to be satisfying at all. A couple examples, Firestone by Tanya Huff.
Yeah.
There's like, oh, look, I don't even care about spoilers. Look, it's the advisor, the evil advisor to the king, the most obvious character it could possibly be.
The one who
oh,
even
look,
acts
it is him
evil.
After all.
Yeah. Like, that, it was so obvious that I was actually wondering if she was going for a double reversal or a double reveal that he wasn't the bad guy. Hmm. Because he has this,
right.
He's obviously evil throughout the entire book. Until at the very end, he has this scene where he, like, kind of explains his motivation. And I'm like, wait a minute. Am I being tricked? Is this really deep? Where, like, I just assumed he was evil because he was the king's advisor and he actually has, like, good reasons for what he was doing. But no, he was, in fact, the bad guy.
Same thing with this is also the issue with Legend of Korra Season 1, where you have Amon who is wearing a mask, mm-hmm. right? And that hides his identity. You know that there is somebody out there who is Amon, and you don't know who his identity is. The expectation then is that is a mystery that is being built up, and that, you know, and so when he takes it off and he turns out to be some random guy that you have never met before, that is not
that
satisfying,
was so
right?
Upsetting.
And so, so I think that when you're doing a lot of these surprise villains, where the storyteller or storytellers have decided that they want to maximize on that tension and that which doing so builds up this mystery that it has to have a satisfying payoff. If you decide not to take advantage of that, which makes your foreshadowing easier because people aren't actively looking for clues, then it's not important if somebody happens to see your foreshadowing and knows it ahead of time because you're not trying to build it up like it's a big mystery.
Yeah. You don't want to get towards like the end of the story and then like, you're wondering when's the villain going to show up, and then you realize that there's only like three characters left, and it's like, well, it's probably going to be one of these guys.
and for examples, like so Teen Wolf show I like, and every season of Teen Wolf it's interesting because they have two antagonists, and one is a known antagonist and one is a mysterious antagonist, and every single season you know, they build up, like, who is the mysterious antagonist, you know, and Teen Wolf is also a sort of horror show. I think it's more so as it goes on, partly. And I think, you know, that tension is really, really important to horror. And the other thing that I think makes this surprise villain an advantage is that it's easier to create threat. Because basically what they do is they have something that is, it's a werewolf show, right? So they have a lot of, like, monsters that are actually people because they transform. And with any villain or monster, it's like the better you get to know it, the less scary it is. And so hiding the human side of this monster or villain, you know, where you don't actually, it is technically a person, but you don't even know who that person is, I think allows them to create a stronger sense of threat. At the same time, I think it's also having a second antagonist that people know also allows them because, you know, trying to work for an entire season with one antagonist while keeping that antagonist super, like, remote and mysterious so that you can keep up your threat level is actually kind of hard to work around plot-wise, I think. And so having a second antagonist where we can actually see that antagonist's motivation, see them shoot at people, see them have conversations, I think is just really helpful for the plot. And so they do, you know, one of each pretty much every season that they've seen. And it seems to work really well for them.
And Teen Wolf, at least in season one, I don't know how they do this later, but Teen Wolf also was an expert of using the decoy of a character who... It really seems like they are foreshadowing is the villain, which is a good way to keep your viewers occupied trying to guess who the villain is while you slowly and subtly establish the person who it actually is, right? Because for all of season one, it's like, is it the veterinarian? Like, he seems like he clearly knows something about what's happening, and he's like a shady guy who works with animals. He could be a werewolf. I don't know.
Then you get those great surprise, he's not a villain moments.
Yeah, exactly. Or at least he's not the villain this season. I'm still not sure about him. That guy. He creeps me out a little bit.
I'm wondering if, you know, I think that the problem is that there has to be, if you do this build up and you know who it is and it actually turns out to be that person, that is generally unsatisfying. I think it possibly could work with, like, a double fake out. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's totally this person. Oh, wait, no, that person is totally innocent. Oh, wait, it is that person. Then I think you'll probably be okay.
Yeah, like, you don't want to go too far. Like, Teen Wolf also knew not to have, like, a bunch of episodes where everyone's like, it's that guy, he's clearly the alpha, right? Like, the episode where there was the culmination of them thinking that the veterinarian was the bad guy was also the episode where you learned it wasn't him. So, like, that was a good way to handle it, I thought.
Yeah, and definitely if you do too much wavering with your sort of your red herring, it starts to come off really contrived. Like, sometimes in some cases you can have, like, two different possibilities. Like, we think it's that person or that person, but we can't tell which, you know? And it can work to a certain extent, but, like, I feel like very quickly any kind of plotline like that, and this also happens with, like, who will she choose romances.
Yeah.
And other, like, when there's only, like, two possibilities, is if it lasts long at all, the storyteller has to do different teases and clues to keep that indecision between these two options going, and then that just starts to come off as incredibly contrived, because you can just tell that the storyteller is manipulating you to that effect. It doesn't feel natural anymore.
If you guys don't mind, I would like to talk briefly about three common mistakes that I have noticed with surprise villains.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so the first one, I don't know if you guys have ever encountered this, but a character that I liked too much, and now I'm upset that they're a bad guy.
Yep, definitely.
who is this?
So the one that came to mind for me immediately was Zora from the video game Child of Light. She is your character's kind of sarcastic, sharp-tongued older sister.
Yeah.
And first of all, like, sister stories are rare enough, right? So I was into that. I was into, like, running around this weird fantasy kingdom with my big sis beating up monsters. Like, that was cool. And I was really annoyed when it was, I guess, spoilers. I should have put a spoiler tag on this.
we will put a spoiler note.
Yeah.
On the show notes.
But I just, like, I was really annoyed when she turned out to be a villain. And, like, I wanted that to be, like, a double fake out or a chance to redeem her or something. And it never came. I was very upset. And then I found out other people were upset because they had put a lot of points into upgrading her. And then she was just no longer in their party. And I had not even thought of that. I was like, I didn't even think that my upgrade points were gone. I was just like, that character was so cool, though. I liked her.
Yeah, I think you could get away with that as long as you gave it a chance, if the character was redeemed later, right? Like, if audience get really attached to a character and that character turns out to be evil all along, but the protagonist has opportunity to convert them to team good, then you're really just using it to develop that character a lot more and give that character a lot more depth and honestly screen time too. So I think that would really, really take this sting off. But, I mean, that's a good point. Especially if the character now becomes disposed at the end of the story because they were a villain. Right. That's no fun.
Have you guys seen Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 1?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, but you can
spoil
it.
I'm going to spoil it. I mean, it was just like, I mean, it seems like anybody who's been Hail Hydrid is like flawless in like not revealing themselves until the show decides to like reveal them. And so I don't know about you, Oren, but like when Ward was revealed to be like Hydra, I was just like, are you kidding me? It's like they suddenly decided they had to have a bad person in that team immediately. I didn't feel like I was prepped enough to even consider that there was somebody in the group.
I would agree. Yeah. I would agree with you if I had any positive feelings for Ward.
Yeah, that is a good point.
Like, I don't believe them because I've found some interviews with the show's creators where they're like, no, we always planned for Ward to be a Hydra agent. I don't believe them. Like, I think they are lying because it's not just that it comes out of nowhere. It's that he starts acting completely different.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Like the actor was just phoning in his performance for like the entire season, and then suddenly he's like, I'm a Hydra agent, and like it really feels more like they just found a role for him that he could actually play well.
That's yeah, I didn't think about that. It's interesting.
And that character was like super extraneous, and he really needed to go.
Yeah, that's actually, now that you brought that up, he was flat. I mean, there was nothing going for him, so for this kind of payoff to work, like, you know, maybe pick somebody that actually matters.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what I mean, because like if you're looking at it from the perspective of planning it from the beginning, it has a lot of flaws. But if you're looking at it from the perspective of it's almost the end of season one, our ratings are tanking, nobody likes Ward. He's really likes Ward.
Yeah.
He's really extraneous, and we have this big reveal coming up where we're going to reveal that S.H.I.E.L.D. was taken over by Hydra. Like, why not use Ward? Like, that's not ideal if you're planning it from the beginning, but once you're in the middle of a live running story, it's like, yeah, I think that was a great decision. It does feel odd, but because television shows can't be completely planned out from the beginning. They have to make course corrections as they find out what works and doesn't work. I think that was a good decision. The better decision would have been to not have such a boring character to start with.
Yep.
But, you know, once you got one,
make the best out of it.
Yeah. Right? But if you're not writing an episodic story where some of them are already published and you can't, this is definitely a thing that, if at all possible, you want to plan ahead. Because again, even looking back and thinking that everything the character's previously done can be explained by their new villainous motivations, the dialogue will always be subtly off and their actions will always be like a little bit not quite right. And it's with the actual piece that's Planet Let's written down, it's not too hard to tell when somebody has actually planned for a character to be a villain versus when they haven't and they just decided randomly to make that character a villain.
No, I was going to say, what else bothers you, Oren?
Okay, I have two more. Okay, the next one is a villain that the show acts like is a surprise villain, but is really obviously a villain. They cackle and have an evil smile. The best example I can think of for this character trope is in Babylon 5 when they first introduce Mr. Morden, I think is his name.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
gosh,
Chris loves this character. Chris loves him so much.
I just saw like the first Babylon 5 episode with Morden in it, and this guy is just so over the top. And like, the thing that really makes him hilarious is that he doesn't even seem threatening. But he's clearly a villain at the same time. And so the combination just makes him kind of like really annoying. And it's like, why are the characters putting up with this person? Why can't they just get rid of him?
And it's like, it's not like this character has to pretend to be good. Like, he could just be a villain, but like, he's it's clear that he's supposed to be secretive, and there's really a question of, like, why none of the ambassadors reported him to security. Because he just seems like he's there as, like, kind of harassing people, and it's like, this guy's clearly up to no good, you know?
Okay, just I think it is worth describing in a little bit more detail what he does. Basically, he goes up to a really important ambassador, somehow gets, like, a meeting with him, or just says that some connection referred him, and then just says, "What do you want?" over and over again, even though it makes no sense, and they tell him to leave, and they know that it makes no sense, until they, like, tell him their, like, deepest desires. But the deepest desires don't even seem particularly, like, useful. Like, they don't seem like something you could use in a plot, and also kind of obvious.
Yeah.
Like, I want my empire to go back to its old glory days. Okay, that's fine. Like, that's great. Like, you could have told everybody that. No one would care. Anyway, he just pesters them in this manner and just repeats this dumb phrase over and over again until they tell him their deepest desires, and then, like, walks off and then is, like, weirdly does his weird phrase and expression at somebody else.
And, like, the reason why it feels so disingenuous is that, like, it turns out he actually does have the ability to, like, you know, make deliveries on his promises, but, like, he could have just started with that, right? He didn't need to do this weird theatrical, like, you know, mustache twirling thing that I think is supposed to reveal stuff about the characters, but it doesn't really. It's like, this is all stuff we already knew, and that would be obvious to anyone who, like, read their, you know, their freaking personnel, like, a personnel profile. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, that's the sort of thing you want to avoid, is a character who, when you meet them immediately, like, this guy's obviously evil. Does nobody notice how evil he is? Palpatine is sort of another example of that in the Star Wars prequels, and he's not technically a surprise because everyone, all the audience knows he's evil because of the previous films. But everyone in the story is like, can you guys not tell how evil Palpatine is? Like, he's practically cackling behind his hand.
I feel like this is a question of basic villain competence. Like, your villain, to be a good villain, has to be a competent at, you know, what they're doing. And if they can't fake being good, they're not competent. If that is, assuming that what they're doing requires them to fake being good, right? And so having villains that are just clearly not good actors, and they're interacting with protagonists pretending to be a good person, it really takes away all the credibility from the villain and makes them not feel threatening. Yeah. And
so make sure you allocate a high charisma score to your surprise villains.
Yeah.
And my last thing is a surprise villain that it turns out had no reason to pretend in the first place.
Just to be a jerk.
Because, like, this is a thing that happens sometimes, and this...
Okay, what's the example?
So the best example that I had off the top of my head is actually the final five Cylons in Battlestar, because they reached a point in Battlestar where they, I think, realized that there was no conceivable reason for the remaining Cylons to not have revealed themselves yet, because, mm-hmm. like, they you know, they could have easily destroyed the fleet, like, a bunch of times if they were anyone important. So they came up with, like, this weird explanation of how, like, the final five Cylons don't know they're Cylons because they're secretly from Earth and they have amnesia, and, like, most of them are characters you've barely heard of, and so it was like, but one of them was Colonel Ty, and there was just no way to explain why Colonel Ty was a Cylon and had done the things he did, so they came up with this really contrived amnesia plot, and, like, that's an example of a character that there's no reason for them to pretend to be a villain. Another example might be Peter Pettigrew from Harry Potter. Another example of clearly the author deciding between books that that Scabbers was going to secretly be a villain. There's no way that was planned. And, yeah. like, it really raises serious questions of, like, did he just pick the Weasley kids by coincidence and happen to be close to Harry Potter? Or, like, was this all some really complicated setup to get him there? Why is he hanging around with the Weasleys of all people?
Right. And he'd been with the Weasley kids for, like, 13 years, so it really can't be to get close to Harry Potter in the first place, because he could not have predicted that Ron would become friends with Harry,
I was, like, looking back, I was looking through his Wikipedia entry and being like, is there, like, something about how, like, Ron and Harry's fathers were friends? Maybe that would give him a reason to? But there's not. I couldn't find anything.
And it's hard to imagine that he would enjoy being a child's pet.
The other thing that bothers me about that is, like, isn't Ron's dad, like, supposed to be, like, he's all about, like, muggle things? And this like, rat that doesn't show any magical abilities is, like, really, really old. Like, it's a normal muggle rat. Like, why is it still alive?
So it was weird because in the first couple books, they just wrote that off as, like, a magic thing that happens to animals sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And then in the third book, it was like, oh, the reason he lived so long was that he was actually a polymorphed human. And it was like, okay, but I guess. But it's, you made it sound like that's just a thing that happens to animals in the magical kingdom. Also, I object to the vilification of rats. Because I have a pet rat, and she is adorable. She's my girlfriend's pet rat, technically. But, you know, whatever. She's great. Don't be rude to rats.
Well, those are some good pet peeves.
Pet peeves. So we are running out of time. I took up a lot of it with my irritations about surprise villains. So what do you guys have any big important stuff that you want to end with before we close this episode?
I guess I just, if you're going to have one in your story, like, for me, I enjoy them more, like, if it's a relevant character that helps the protagonist and his been there early on in the story, then I feel like, yeah, and then in addition to the things we've said, then I feel like it's like, ah, like there's an understanding here. I feel like the twist of the knife when they reveal themselves to be the villain is a little bit more complete, maybe. Instead of just announcing, like, surprise, I'm now in charge of the world and my plans have come to fruition. So yeah, I mean, and maybe in a few of stories, they're more like, that I've enjoyed, they're not quite the main, like, villains. They're more like what Chris mentioned earlier, like a surprise antagonist, where, like, you know, they could have been a good person, but they got compromised, like, before the events of the story. And so they have to, like, perform, you know, these kind of, like, subversive actions because somebody else is blackmailing them, or they have motivations that just don't, like, can only be achieved by betraying, like, the main protagonist.
Chris, what about you?
I think I got through most of the things that I wanted to talk about with them, and the thing that I, you know, have an issue with that I wish, it's hard to fix, that I wish was easier, was that when you are building up a mysterious villain, and somebody knows it's a villain, like, most of the times when it happens, when it's revealed, you kind of realize that there was no way that you could have guessed who it was.
Yep.
That there was not, even if they had created plausible reasons that this person was an antagonist, there's no way anybody could have guessed that. They did not provide enough information. And I find that when you're building up a mystery to also be a little bit unsatisfying. You kind of want things to sort of click into place. You'd be like, oh, those things, yes, that makes perfect sense. But at the same time, when the audience is actively looking for clues, it is really hard to do that without actually tipping them off. And so a lot of times in these stories, there just isn't sufficient information for anyone to make a guess that isn't just, like, random. and I find that disappointing, but it is also incredibly tricky. So I understand the same
thing. You could always do is have a story where there's a secret villain that everyone's looking for, but they haven't actually even been introduced yet. That would be, like, a brilliant subversion. I think that's why you love Twin Peaks so much, Chris. Isn't that the case?
Hold on.
No, we should not talk about that show.
We don't have to talk about it. And I literally just finished the first season last night. And I saw your notes, Chris, and I was like, oh, nuts. Like, I guess I get to look forward to this catastrophe.
It just keeps getting worse.
Oh, man.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, that was our surprise is that Chris and I are surprise Twin Peaks haters, I guess. That was our surprise villain to Wes, who was trying to get through Twin Peaks. So good job.
I will finish it and jump on that train with you guys. Don't worry.
All right. Well, those of you listening at home, if anything that we said piqued your interest, you can email us at podcast@mythgrants.com. Otherwise, we will see you next week. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean, and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Colton.